America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is question. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy. At last, everything is done for you.
Welcome, welcome. Welcome back, if you listened to the first hour. This is the Freedom Ministry on RBN, and I am your host, Chris Switzer. If you wish to send me a message or email me, you may. You can send me an email to my dreaded Gmail account. It's chrsswtzr@gmail.com. It's my first and last name, Chris Switzer, without the vowels. Feel free to drop me a line and I will return your email. We're reading from Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, published in 1958. If you wish to check out my work online, you may do so by going to bitchute.com, bitchute.com/The Freedom Ministry. Subscribe, check out my work. We're reading from page 33 in the PDF. I had just shared with you how they passed decrees to stop these Jewish merchants from committing all types of unlawful acts in their host nation. But all the decrees accomplished was to intensify the hatred they had for the Church of Christ, and they started a continuing campaign to separate the church from the state. To achieve this purpose, they introduced the idea of secularism among the laity. Secularism, secular humanism. In 1253, the French government ordered the Jews expelled because they refused to obey the law. And again, one of over 1,000 times in recorded human history that this occurred. Most of the Jews who were expelled went over to England. By 1255, the Jewish moneylenders had obtained absolute control of many church dignitaries and most of the nobility. That the moneylenders, the rabbis, and elders belonged to the Illuminati was proved by evidence given during the investigation ordered by King Henry III into the ritual slaying of St. Hugh of Lincoln in 1255. 18 Jews were proved to have been the culprits. They were tried, found guilty, and executed. In 1272, King Henry died. Edward I became King of England. He determined the Jewish leaders must give up the practice of usury. In 1275, he had Parliament pass the Statutes of Jewry. They were designed to curb the power Jewish usurers were exerting over their debtors, both Christians and fellow Jews. The Statutes of Jewry were probably the first legislation in which the Commons and Parliament had an active part. They cannot be classified as anti-Semitic because they actually protected the interests of honest and law-abiding Jews. Of course, no Jewish organization would ever see anything like that today, as we learn from the actions and words of the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, today. They don't look at things in any sensible or common sense type of view. They only want to further the ends of their father, the devil, as it states plain in John 8:44. This is a biblical war of good and evil. That's what we see today. But as had happened so often before, the Jewish moneylenders thought that the power they could exert over both the church and the state would permit them to defy the king's decree in the same way they had set at naught those passed by the Lateran Council. They made a grave mistake this time. In 1290, King Edward issued another decree. All Jews were expelled from England. Another expulsion. This was the start of what historians call the Great Eviction. After Edward I started the ball rolling, all the crowned heads of Europe followed his example. In 1306, France expelled the Jews. In 1348, Saxony followed suit. In 1360, Hungary. In 1370, Belgium. 1380, Slovakia. 1420, Austria. 1444, the Netherlands. 1492, Spain. The expulsion of the Jews from Spain has special signification. It throws light on the Spanish Inquisition. Most people have the idea the Inquisition was instituted by Roman Catholics to persecute Protestants who had broken away from the Church. As a matter of fact, the Inquisition, as introduced by Pope Innocent III, was a means of unmasking heretics and infidels who were masquerading as Christians for the purpose of destroying the Christian religion from within. It didn't make the slightest difference to the inquisitors whether the accused was Jew or Gentile, black or white. The terrible ceremony of the auto da fa, or act of faith, was specially designed to be used in connection with the execution of all convicted heretics and infidels when Torquemada was Grand Inquisitor, 1420 to 1498. It is these hidden incidents which reveal so much truth. It was in Spain during the 14th century that the Jewish moneylenders first succeeded in having the loans they made the state secure by the right to collect the taxes levied upon the people. They used such cruelty when demanding their pound of flesh that it only required the inflammatory oratory of the priest Fernando Martinez to produce mass action, which ended in one of the bloodiest massacres recorded in history. Here again is a perfect example of how thousands of quote-unquote innocent Jews were victimized for the sins and crimes committed against humanity by just a few. But I will also note here that these people will never assimilate into any culture that's around them in the host nation in which they occupy or live in. They never do it, ever. And when they go to these synagogues and listen to those leaders called rabbis in their community, they talk of the non-Jew as a disease. And the hatred for the non-Jew, and the teaching to take advantage of, cheat, steal, lie to the non-Jew, is propagated throughout the community, from young to old, poor to rich, male to female. They all get that teaching, and it's ingrained in them from birth to grave. So I understand quite differently through experience and study. In 1495, Lithuania expelled the Jews. In 1498, Portugal. In 1540, Italy. In 1551, Bavaria. It is important to remember that during the general evictions, certain wealthy and influential Jews managed to obtain sanctuary in Bordeaux, Avignon, certain papal states, Marseille, northern Alsace, and part of northern Italy. But as stated in the Encyclopedia Britannica, quote, the masses of the Jewish people were thus to be found once more in the East and in the Polish and Turkish empires. The few communities suffered to remain in Western Europe were meantime subjected at last to all the restrictions which earlier ages had usually allowed to remain as an ideal, so that, in a sense, the Jewish Dark Ages may be said to begin with the Renaissance. This admission would indicate there is some justification for the claim made by certain historians that not until the Western European nations wrested economic control from the Jewish moneylenders did the rebirth of Western civilization occur. Following the Great Eviction, the Jews again resumed living in ghettos or kahals. Thus isolated from the masses of the population, the Jews were under the direction and control of the rabbis and elders, many of whom were influenced by the Illuminati, and the wealthy Jewish moneylenders who remained in their various sanctuaries. In the ghettos, agents of the Illuminati inspired a spirit of hatred and revenge in the hearts of the Jewish people against those who had evicted them. This continues today, folks. The rabbis reminded them, as the quote-unquote chosen people of God, which they are not, the day would come when they would have their revenge and inherit the earth. My brothers and sisters, let me tell you plain that Scripture is very, very blunt about it, and it tells exactly who the Israelite people are. And I have a video up on my BitChute channel called 100 Proofs that the Israelites were white, to show you exactly what I mean. It could only be these people, and it is certainly not the Jewish merchants and moneylenders. It does not match. It doesn't fit. It's not true. It should be mentioned that most Jews who settled in Eastern Europe were restricted to living within the pale of settlement located on the western borders of Russia, and extending from the shores of the Baltic Sea in the north to the shores of the Black Sea in the south. Most of them were Khazar Jews. The Khazar Jews were noted for their Yiddish culture, their rapacious practices in financial matters, and their lack of ethics in commercial transactions. They should not be confused with the biblical Hebrews, who were not Jews at all, mind you, who are mild-mannered and, generally speaking, pastoral people. That's because they share no bonds at all, blood or otherwise, spiritual or otherwise. Within the ghettos, in an atmosphere of hatred, the desire for revenge was developed by the agents of the Illuminati. They organized these negative conditions into the World Revolutionary Movement based on terrorism. Terrorism. From its very inception, the international-minded money barons and their high priests designed, financed, and controlled the World Revolutionary Movement. They used it as the instrument by which they would obtain their revenge on the Christian churches, the crowned heads of Europe. History proves how the money barons developed the revolutionary movement into international communism as we know it today. They organized individual acts of terrorism into a disciplined revolutionary movement. And today, they operate from a state. They have a whole area of land they occupy, illegally, unlawfully. But they got the nod from the powers that be. And that's what they call Israel today, which has nothing to do with the Israel mentioned in the Bible from Holy Father's Scripture. And the prophecies that pertain to Israel in the Bible are not what you would consider Palestine today, called Israel. They are not the same. Please don't confuse the two. Lots of quote-unquote well-meaning preachers will preach in error all day long about this garbage. and it's heresy. They then planned systematic infiltration of the Jews back into the countries from which they had been expelled. And of course, they always got in through the back door with communism. Because their re-entry was illegal, the only method by which infiltration could be accomplished was to establish Jewish undergrounds. Because the Jews who infiltrated into the undergrounds of the European cities could not obtain lawful employment, they were supplied with funds with which to develop the black market system. They indulged in every kind of illegal traffic and trade. Working on the principle of the joint stock company, the identity of the money barons who owned and controlled this vast underground system always remained secret. Count de Poncins, Mrs. Nesta Webster, Sir Walter Scott, and many other authors and historians have suspected that the Illuminati and a group of internationalists were the secret power behind the world revolutionary movement. But it was not until recently that sufficient evidence was pieced together to prove that what they suspected was an actual fact. As the events of history are unrolled in their chronological sequence, it will be seen how the Illuminati used the Semitic groups and the Aryan groups to serve their purpose, and involved millions upon millions of people in revolutions and wars to further their own secret and selfish ambitions. No more brother wars for Jewish interests, my friends. No more. We cannot shed our youth's blood on foreign soil for the interest of the rich elite or the synagogue of Satan. No more. William Foss and Cecil Garrity, who wrote The Spanish Arena, said, quote, "The question of who are the leading figures behind the attempt of the joint stock company domination of the world and how they obtain their ends is beyond the scope of this book. But it is one of the important libres et fers yet to be written. It will have to be written by a man of the highest courage who will count his life as nothing compared with enlightening the world as to what the satanic self-appointed priesthood would ordain." And they say this because they know how dangerous it is to expose these evil men. How successful the plan to infiltrate back into the countries from which they had been expelled turned out to be can best be judged by the following records. The Jews were back in England in 1600, back in Hungary by 1500. They were expelled again in 1582. They were back in Slovakia in 1562, but were expelled again in 1744. They were back in Lithuania in 1700. But regardless of how many times they were expelled, there always remained the Jewish underground from which the revolutionary activities of the secret powers were conducted. Because King Edward I of England had been the first to expel the Jewish money barons in France, Holland, and Germany decided it would be poetic justice if they tried out their planned revolutionary technique in England first. They used their underground agents, or cells, to cause trouble between the king and his government, employers and labor, ruling class and workers, church and state. The plotters injected controversial issues into politics and religion to divide the people into two opposing camps. First, they divided the people in England into Catholics and Protestants. Then they divided the Protestants into conformists and nonconformists, and so on and so forth. When King Charles I was brought into disagreement with his parliament, a Jewish money baron in Holland named Manasseh ben Israel had his agents contact Oliver Cromwell. They offered him large sums of money to carry out their plan to overthrow the British throne. Stay tuned for this. Right back.
No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now...
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. And please, if you can, and you have the means, donate to RBN. Please. If you want to keep shows like this on the air, please donate. I'm reading from Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, published in 1958. Explaining how they run the world. I'm on page 36 of the PDF. And they offered King Charles I large sums of money if he would help overthrow the British throne. Manasseh ben Israel and other German and French moneylenders financed Cromwell. Fernandez Carvajal of Portugal, often referred to in history as the Great Jew, became Cromwell's chief military contractor. He reorganized the Roundheads into a model army. He provided them with the best arms and equipment money could buy. Once the conspiracy was underway, hundreds of trained revolutionaries were smuggled into England and were absorbed into the Jewish underground. The same thing goes on in America today. And it really, really does. The Jewish underground is the same network that the State of Israel, or the ethnostate, the Edomite ethnostate, call themselves Jews, who usurped the land in Palestine. Their state security services, or the Israeli secret intelligence services, ISIS, ISIS, for real, Mossad, uses this same network today and has, as we're reading, for centuries. They call the helpers of the Jewish cause Sionim. Sionim. The same thing goes on in America today. The head of the Jewish underground in England at that time was a Jew named D'Souza. The great Jew, Fernandez Carvajal, had used his influence to have D'Souza appointed Portuguese ambassador. It was in his house, protected by diplomatic immunity, that the leaders of the Jewish Revolutionary Underground remained hidden and worked out their plots and intrigue. And they are, my friends, the modern fathers of terrorism. Jews. And they're giddy about it when boasting about how they usurped power in Palestine and how they overthrew the British mandate and bombed the King David Hotel, killed people, you know. They make no qualms about it. They are the fathers of modern terrorism today, folks. Admittedly, once the revolution had been decided upon, the Jewish plotters introduced Calvinism into England to split church and state and divide the people. Contrary to general belief, Calvinism is of Jewish origin. It was deliberately conceived to split the adherents of the Christian religions and divide the people. Calvin's real name was Cohen. When he went from Geneva to France to start preaching his doctrine, he became known as Cohen, or Cowan. Then in England, it became Calvin. History proves that there is hardly a revolutionary plot that wasn't hatched in Switzerland. There is hardly a Jewish revolutionary leader who hasn't changed his name. And it's always irked me, you know, and always been a scratch, you know, an itch that I had to scratch, I should say, about why we have these, you know, banks in Switzerland, right? And nobody will bomb Switzerland in any of these wars because of the banks and the money interests. Think about it. At the B'nai B'rith celebrations, which is Jewish Freemasonry, held in Paris, France in 1936, Calvin, whatever his name may have been, was enthusiastically acclaimed to have been of Jewish descent. Jewish descent. In addition to the religious controversy, the revolutionary leaders organized armed mobs to aggravate every situation injected into politics and labor by their masters. Isaac Disraeli, 1766 to 1848, a Jew, and father of Benjamin Disraeli, who afterwards became Lord Beaconsfield, deals with this angle of the British Revolution in detail in his two-volume story, The Life of Charles II. He remarks that he obtained considerable information from the records of Melchior de Salem, a Jew who was French envoy to the British government at that time. Disraeli draws attention to the great similarity or pattern of the revolutionary activities which preceded both the British and the French revolutions. In other words, the handiwork of the secret and real directors of the world revolutionary movement could clearly be seen in both. A fact which we will proceed to prove. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Stay tuned.
We'll proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question! The comfort you've demanded is now met.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer: 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer: 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt.
Welcome back. You're still listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. We're reading from William Guy Carr's book, Pawns in the Game. He's written a few other titles as well, all very good books. This one published in 1958. We're on page 37 of the PDF. I'm going to get right into it. The evidence which absolutely convicts Oliver Cromwell of participating in the Jewish revolutionary plot was obtained by Lord Alfred Douglas, who edited a weekly review, Plain English, published by the North British Publishing Company. In an article which appeared in the issue of September 3, 1921, he explained how his friend, Mr. L.D. Van Valkert of Amsterdam, Holland, had come into possession of a missing volume of records of the synagogue of Mulsheim. This volume had been lost during the Napoleonic Wars. The volume contains records of letters written to and answered by the directors of the synagogue. They are written in German. One entry, dated June 16, 1647, reads, and it's from Oliver Cromwell to Ebenezer Pratt, quote, "In return for financial support, we'll advocate admission of Jews to England. This, however, impossible while Charles living. Charles cannot be executed without trial. adequate grounds for which do not at present exist. Therefore, advise that Charles be assassinated, but will have nothing to do with arrangements for procuring an assassin, though willing to help in his escape." End quote. In reply to this dispatch, the records show E. Pratt wrote a letter dated July 12, 1647, addressed to Oliver Cromwell. Quote, "We'll grant financial aid as soon as Charles is removed, and Jews admitted. Assassination too dangerous. Charles should be given an opportunity to escape. His recapture will then make trial and execution possible. The support will be liberal, but useless to discuss terms until trial commences." End quote. On November 12th that same year, Charles was given the opportunity to escape. He was, of course, recaptured. Hollis and Ludlow, authorities on this chapter of history, are both on record as considering the flight as the stratagem of Cromwell. After Charles had been recaptured, events moved apace. Cromwell had the British Parliament purged of most members he knew were loyal to the king. Notwithstanding this drastic action, when the House sat all night on December 5, 1648, the majority agreed that, quote, "the concessions offered by the king were satisfactory to a settlement." Any such settlement would have disqualified Cromwell from receiving the blood money promised him by the international money barons through their agent, E. Pratt, so Cromwell struck again. He ordered Colonel Pride to purge Parliament of those members who had voted in favor of a settlement with the king. What then happened is referred to in school history books as Pride's Purge. When the purge was finished, 50 members remained. They are recorded as the Rump Parliament. They usurped absolute power. On January 9, 1649, quote, "A High Court of Justice was proclaimed for the purpose of putting the King of England on trial. Two-thirds of the members of the court were levelers from Cromwell's army." That's all you need. The conspirators couldn't find an English lawyer who would draw up a criminal charge against King Charles. Carvajal instructed an alien Jew, Isaac Dorislaus, Manasseh ben Israel's agent in England, to draw up the indictment upon which King Charles was tried. So it was a show trial, you know, a Star Chamber trial. Charles was found guilty of the charges leveled against him by the international Jewish moneylenders, the synagogue of Satan, not by the people of England. On January 30th, 1649, he was publicly beheaded in front of the banqueting house at Whitehall, London. And today, Whitehall, London is where the spooks hold their offices and their court, and right down the road, of course, the city-state of London, the banking interests of the world. The Jewish moneylenders, directed by the high priest of the synagogue of Satan, had had their revenge because Edward I had expelled the Jews from England. Oliver Cromwell received his blood money just as Judas had done with Jesus. History proves that the international Jewish moneylenders had a purpose other than revenge for getting rid of Charles. They removed him to obtain control of England's economy and government. They planned to involve many European countries in war with England. Great sums of money are needed to fight wars. By loaning the crowned heads of Europe the money required to fight wars they fomented, the internationalists were enabled to rapidly increase the national debts of all European nations. And look at the national debt of the United States Corporation today, ticking away, trillions and trillions and trillions. The chronological sequence of events from the execution of King Charles in 1649 to the institution of the Bank of England in 1694 shows how the national debt was increased. The international bankers used intrigue and cunning to throw Christians at each other's throats. 1649, Cromwell, financed by Jews, waged war in Ireland, captures Drogheda and Wexford. British Protestants are blamed for persecution of Irish Catholics. 1650, Montrose in rebellion against Cromwell, captured and executed. 1651, Charles II invades England, defeated and flees back to France. 1652, England involved in war with Dutch. 1653. Cromwell proclaims himself Lord Protector of England. 1654. England involved in more wars. 1656. Trouble started in American colonies. 57. Death of Cromwell, son Richard named Protector. 1659. Richard, disgusted with intrigue, resigns. 1660. General Monk occupies London. Charles II proclaimed king. 1661. Truth revealed regarding intrigue entered into by Cromwell and his cohorts, Ireton and Bradshaw, causes serious public reaction. Bodies are exhumed and hung from gallows on Tyburn Hill, London. 1662. Religious strife is engendered to divide members of the Protestant denominations. Nonconformists to the established Church of England are persecuted. 1664. England is again involved in war with Holland. 65. A Great Depression settles over England. Unemployment and shortages of food undermine the health of the people, and the Great Plague breaks out. Look at today, 2022. What they are doing with shortages, supply lines, unemployment, COVID. There is nothing new under the sun. And in 1666, England involved in war with France and Holland. 67, cabal agents start new religious and political strife. And we have James calling in from Vancouver on line one. We'll take your call, James.
Yeah, right. Well, you're making progress there. I just wanted to ask you a question. Would you say that the Jesuits who run Georgetown University, are they loyal to the United States or are they loyal to the Vatican?
I'd say they're loyal to the Vatican and their Jesuit oath.
Right.
My opinion is loyal to the oath they signed as the Jesuit oath. Yes.
Well, you're familiar with that oath, I take it.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what that oath says? That oath says that I take it as my responsibility, I'm paraphrasing, to murder whoever I have to, right, in order to carry out the works of the Society of Jesus, right? So... As far as bankers go, would you be of the opinion, and it's my opinion, that a lot of the Rothschild money actually comes from the Vatican, you see? That these bankers are all in a cartel. You know what I'm saying? So that if Rothschild needs money, today's buyer is tomorrow's seller, and if the Rothschilds need money, they'll go to the Vatican, and then when the Vatican needs money, they'll go back to the Rothschilds.
Sure.
But, as you put it quite succinctly a while ago, the crap never flies on the face of the popes or those religious curia boys. They always look pious, right?
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? And the Machiavelli, sure. I think you know, said in The Prince, the prince must appear to be pious, even though he's not. So I just wanted to try to do a few touch-ups on your arguments there that there's a high cabal of these guys.
Okay.
I don't know, but Edomites and Jacobites or whatever they are, I know that everybody wants to make money in this cartel, you see.
Sure. So, sure do.
And then, of course, war is the, as you know, we are at war with COVID and these shots, you see. So I think this is the ultimate war, and we're having mass casualties every day.
And that's right.
And the cabal is making money on it.
And yes, they are.
Pope Francis said, go get that shot, right? Now,
yeah.
Who is he? Yeah. Who,
I'll do.
Right. Yeah. So the whole damn thing is an antichrist operation. So anyway, well, okay. Carry on.
Yeah, appreciate your insight, James. Don't be a stranger, right, as always. Okay. Always appreciate the calls.
Well, I'll try to. Yeah. Okay. Thanks again. Bye now.
Bye bye, James. Yeah, he's right. However, I do see that these peoples who have been expelled over 1,000 times from 110 host nations just looked at the Vatican, their network, right, and that institution as just another vehicle to get their ends, to seek their ultimate agenda of world domination over who they call the Goyim, the non-Jew, right? But Goyim in Hebrew, because these people are not the original Hebrews, mind you, they're the imposters, but in the original Hebrew, Goyim just means nations. Nations. Goy means nation, and Goyim, the plural, nations, right? But they, of course, when speaking of the non-Jew, refer to him as Goyim, or cattle. Nothing. They see you as less than human, without a soul, like dogs. And that's not how I see you. That's how the rabbi sees you, and has always seen you. And I'm going down the list here for chronological posterity, and we're at 1674. England and Holland make peace. The men directing international intrigue change their characters. They become matchmakers. They elevate plain Mr. William Stadtholder to the rank of Captain General of the Dutch forces. He became William Prince of Orange. It was arranged that he meet Mary, the eldest daughter of the Duke of York. The Duke was only one place removed from becoming King of England. 1677. Princess Mary of England married William Prince of Orange. See how they're setting up these dynastic clans to then usurp the power of the state and the state's religion? But it's really backed by the blood money and the influence of these moneylenders, this Jewish cabal under a synagogue of Satan? Yes, I hope you're seeing it. It's been there throughout history. Historians are just careful as to what they say and how they say things, because they're in so much fear to be labeled an anti-Semite that it is just ridiculous. They will actually lie so that they are not considered a label. It's shameful. To place William, Prince of Orange, upon the throne of England, it was necessary to get rid of both Charles II and the Duke of York, who was slated to become James II. 1683. The Rye House plot was hatched. The intention was to assassinate both King Charles II and the Duke of York. It failed. 1685. King Charles II died. The Duke of York became King James II of England. Immediately, a campaign of La Infamy was started against James II. The Duke of Monmouth was persuaded, or bribed, into leading an insurrection to overthrow the king. They keep on at it, don't they? On June the 30th, the Battle of Sedgemoor was fought. Monmouth was defeated and captured. He was executed July 15. In August, Judge Jeffreys opened what historians have named the Bloody Assizes. Over 300 persons concerned in the Monmouth Rebellion were sentenced to death under circumstances of atrocious cruelty. Nearly 1,000 others were condemned to be sold as slaves. This was a typical example of how the secret powers, working behind the scenes, create conditions for which other people are blamed. Happens the same today, folks. People fall on their swords so that the rest may continue and flourish. That happened with Ali North and the Iran-Contra scandals. All of it. They always have somebody to fall on the sword. King James still had to be disposed of before William of Orange could be placed on the throne to carry out their mandate. every person in England was bewitched and bewildered. They were not allowed to know the truth. They blamed everyone and everything except the secret powers who were pulling the strings. Then the conspirators made their next move. 1688. They ordered William, Prince of Orange, to land in England at Torbay. This he did on November 5th. King James abdicated the throne. He fled to France. He had become unpopular by reason of the campaign of L'Infamy, intrigue, and his own foolishness and culpability. 1689. William of Orange and Mary were proclaimed King and Queen of England. King James did not intend to give up the throne without a fight, though. He was a Catholic, so the secret powers set up William of Orange as the champion of the Protestant faith. See how they do that? Divide the people, give them something to bitch and fight about, so that they don't look too closely at the facts. Or follow the money, for that matter. On February 15, 1689, King James landed in Ireland. The Battle of the Boyne was fought by men of definite and opposing religious convictions. The battle has been celebrated by Orangemen on the 12th of July ever since. There is probably not one Orangeman in 10,000 who knows that all the wars and rebellions fought from 1640 to 1689 were fomented by the international moneylenders, the Jews, for the purpose of putting themselves in position to control British politics, the economy, and ultimately, the banking. The banking. Their first objective was to obtain permission to institute a Bank of England and consolidate and secure the debts Britain owed them for loans made to her fight the wars they instigated. History shows how they completed their plans. In the final analysis, none of the countries and people involved in the wars and revolutions obtained any lasting benefits. No permanent or satisfactory solution was reached regarding the political, economic, and religious issues involved. The only people to benefit were the small group of moneylenders who financed the wars and revolutions, and their friends and the agents thereof, who supplied the armies, the ships, and the munitions. It is important to remember that no sooner was the Dutch general sitting upon the throne of England that he persuaded the British Treasury to borrow 1,250,000 pounds of silver from the Jewish bankers who had put him there. The schoolbook history informs our children that the negotiations were conducted by Sir John Hublin and Mr. William Patterson on behalf of the British government with moneylenders whose identity remained secret. Search of historical documents reveals that in order to maintain complete secrecy, the negotiations regarding the terms of the loan were carried on in a church. In the days of Christ, the moneylenders used the temple. In the days of William of Orange, they desecrated a church. There is nothing new under the sun, folks. The international moneylenders, the Jews, the cabal, they agreed to accommodate the British Treasury to the extent of 1,250,000 pounds, providing they could dictate their own terms and conditions. And this was agreed to. The terms were in part, one, that the names of those who made the loan remain secret, and that they be granted a charter to establish the Bank of England. Two, that the directors of the Bank of England be granted the legal right to establish the gold standard for currency by which, three, they could make loans to the value of 10 pounds for every 1 pound value of gold that they had on deposit in their vaults. What is that, my friends? Fractional reserve lending, just like they had in plans for America with the Federal Reserve Bank all those years later. Four, that they be permitted to consolidate the national debt and secure payment of amounts due as principal and interest by direct taxation of the people, the slaves, the goyim. They call you the goyim, the non-Jews. Thus, for the sum of 1,250,000 pounds, King William of Orange sold the people of England into economic bondage, slavery. to the Jewish moneylenders, and they gained all their ambitions. They had usurped the power to issue and control the currency of the nations, just like Amschel Bauer had said. And having secured that power, they cared not who made the laws. Just what the acceptance of the gold standard meant is best illustrated by citing a simple transaction. The directors of the Bank of England could loan 1,000 pounds for every 100 worth of gold they had on deposit as security. And it's way worse today. They collected interest on the full 1,000 pound loan. At 5%, this amounted to 50 pounds a year. Therefore, at the end of the first year, the bankers collected back 50% of the amount they had originally put up to secure the loan. If a private individual wished to obtain a loan, the bankers made him put up real security in the form of property, stocks, or bonds, much in excess of the value of the loan he required. And if he failed to meet payments of principal and interest, they foreclosed, and they took all his property, and the moneylenders obtained many times the value of the loan. And that is how the game is played. The international bankers never intended that England be allowed to pay off the national indebtedness. Oh no, they never want that. The plan was to create international conditions which would plunge all nations concerned deeper and deeper into their debt. And I feel that is where we should leave off today, with not too much time left in the show. And that, my friends, is why I'm reading to you this book, Pawns in the Game, by Commander William Guy Carr, published in 1958, which is appropriate right now today, in 2022, where they are doing the very same thing with England, with America, that they did with England, I should say. It's no different. No different, because they will not assimilate into whatever culture or host nation they inhabit. They will infiltrate, use their networks, and try to best the people, because that is what their father, Satan, desires of them. As you will read in Father Yahweh's book, the New Testament, the book of John, chapter 8, verse 44, and he said again in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, they that lie, they are rich and say they are Jews, but are not, for they are a synagogue of Satan. And the real translation is, they say they are Judeans or Judahites, but they are not, because they falsely claim to be the chosen people of God. Jesus warned us, folks. He warned us. Go to God, men and women. Go to God, brothers and sisters. The truth shall set you free. He has never lied. God bless you, America. Thank you for listening and support RBN. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, folks.
No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now...
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
RBN.
John Stadtmiller's Republic Broadcasting Network. Republicbroadcasting.org.